Football Weekly is on the air.
The second half has begun. Courtney Roby waits for it to come down, takes it in on the 5, is 4, the 15 to the 20, 25, 30, across the 35, and he's free, midfield, down to the 40, 30, 25, 20, say bye-bye, Courtney Roby brings the second half kickoff back, 96 yards for the touchdown. Manning looks for the quick throw, throws to Reggie, touchdown, Reggie wins, oh yes, 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 yes. The Colts win!
This is Wayne Larrivee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Welcome to an in-depth look at professional football. Coming up, a big test in the Bayou and a black and blue rumble in the Metrodome.
Our rookie head coaches Rex Ryan and Raheem Morris in over their heads, and how hot are the chairs under Lovie Smith and Jerry Angelo?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air!
Along with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, this is Wayne Larrivee. On behalf of all of us, we wish you and yours the very best this Thanksgiving holiday weekend. It should be exciting with a lot of football. The way we hear it features news and information gathered by the editors and reporters of Pro Football Weekly. We usually start with one of our editors, but let's go to the top of the ladder, so to speak. And Hub, you had a story this week. Sources informed you that the Bears made an inquiry as to what it would take to get one of those big-name coaches who are out of work right now back into a job. Can you give us details?
Well, Wayne, that basically is the lead on the story, and what's happened is it's taken on a life of its own, which is unfortunate because before reporting that, we tried to report as carefully as we could at Pro Football Weekly that no decisions have been made about the futures of Lovie Smith and Jerry Angelo. Now, that said, there's no question that the heat is building a little bit. There is unhappiness at Hallis Hall in Lake Forest about where this organization is at in what was thought to be a Super Bowl or at least playoff contending season, and so ownership has begun to at least do their due diligence to prepare themselves for the possibility that what if they wanted to make a change, and someone very high up in the organization reached out to an intermediary of one of the big name coaches to find out money wise, staff wise, control wise, what might be involved. That's all that's happened so far. There have been no direct conversations, and what made this story doubly interesting was it came on the heels of a leak from the NFL Network that Bill Cowher, while he had said he doesn't want to do anything while Lovie Smith is still on the job, feels that the Chicago Bears are a job he could find interesting if it was open. So this is one of those, is there fire where there's smoke? Is this really smoke? What we do know is some due diligence has been done by the Chicago Bears as to if they decide to make a change, what it might take to go after one of the big names.
And this due diligence was done by very high up in the organization, no question about it, right?
Well, and that's where it gets interesting, is it was not from the general manager. And so that now raises questions, is everybody in trouble? Is just the coach in trouble? Again, at the moment, nobody's in trouble, but the heat is building underneath them, and it is a story we will watch very closely over the next couple weeks.
All right, Hub, let's bring in Associate Editor Dan Parr. Part of your beat, Dan, at the New York Jets. Mark Sanchez is struggling, as you might expect he would in his rookie season, leading a National Football League club. Head coach Rex Ryan, whose background is defense, apparently is going to get a little bit more involved with the offense. Can you explain?
That's right, Wayne. The perception was growing. People in New York tell us that Rex Ryan was really serving as a glorified defensive coordinator in New York. Whether true or not, that was the perception, and it was only building. So now he's come out and said he's going to be more involved in the offensive game planning and meetings, and I think the struggles of Sanchez really kind of fueled that decision that he ended up making. Sanchez has been pretty up and down this season. He's had three really bad games. If you take those out, he's been about what you'd expect, even better maybe from a rookie quarterback, but they're not seeing the improvement they expected at this late juncture of the season, which has set off a bit of an alarm inside team headquarters.
Well, you know, Dan, somebody in Jets team headquarters might want to go back and take a look at the rookie years of guys like Troy Aikman and Peyton Manning before they become too concerned here, and I'm guessing that the offshoot of this could be that Brian Schottenheimer might not be the happiest camper in the world.
That's right. Ryan made it clear that he tried to make it clear that this was not his decision to get more involved in the offense. It wasn't a slap at Schottenheimer, wasn't a slap at quarterbacks coach Matt Kavanaugh, but you know what people are going to think when they hear this. You have to think that, like you say, Schottenheimer can't be thrilled that this is something that's become such of an attention getter in New York. And certainly he's not happy with the way people are perceiving Sanchez right now. But there's no danger, of course, of Sanchez getting replaced or a change being made. Ryan's going to stick by not only his coaches but Sanchez as well.
We're talking with Associate Editor Dan Parr. Dan, another one of your teams, Tampa. Right before the season, Raheem Morris, the young head coach, fired his offense coordinator, Jeff Jagodinski. He now, at this juncture of the season, has demoted his defensive coordinator, Jim Bates. Can you kind of explain where they're going now with this?
It's a little bit hard to figure out at this point where the Bucs are headed, but Jim Bates has been demoted, like you said. It's not clear what his role is going to be going forward, possibly as a defensive consultant. You know, Raheem Morris decided that he's going to take control of this defense. Now, we don't know what really brought him to that decision. All we know is that this defense has been awful all season, and he's going to go back to a little bit more of the cover two scheme we saw under Monty Kiffin. So it's going to be a little bit of a hybrid form of the defense. Really, with the personnel they have, it's hard to see much improvement happening regardless of what kind of scheme they're running right now.
So, Dan, I guess here's the question. I'm not sure if Raheem Morris or Josh McDaniel is the youngest coach in the NFL right now. Basically, they're both in preschool together. And you've got this young coach, Raheem Morris, who's never been a defensive coordinator at any level above college, is now the head coach and is also going to serve as his own defensive coordinator and try and switch systems with 6 weeks left in the season. It sure sounds like a recipe for disaster, doesn't it?
Yeah, you have to wonder when you hear stuff like this, if, you know, ownership made it clear to Raheem that, listen, this is on you. You can either take it over yourself or you can let someone else run it. But if you don't get this thing fixed here in the final 6 weeks of the year, you know, we're going to have to consider about some serious changes. So you wonder if that you know, word got down to him about that. Because right now it looks like this team is really in poor shape.
Dan, thanks very much. Appreciate your report. And we'll have more Way We Hear It when Pro Football Weekly continues. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly, featuring the publisher and editor, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Executive editor Dan Arkush joins us. Dan, down in St. Louis, Mark Bulger, fractured shin. Is this it for his Rams career as their quarterback?
You know, I would have to think so, Wayne. They're saying he's out 3 to 6 weeks, and at this stage of the season, I think it's very likely that they're going to go with the backup Kyle Bowler the rest of the way, possibly even get the third stringer Keith Nolan to the mix. I think Bulger has just steadily declined, and even before this happened, it was almost a virtual certainty that they were going to go in another direction.
Well, and Dan, I don't think anybody expects Kyle Bowler to be the quarterback of the future. He was brought in to be the backup, and so it's kind of a two-part question here. I'm hearing a lot of intrigue with this kid, Keith Null, and correct me if I've got this wrong, I want to say a sixth-round pick out of some smaller school in Texas. And do they really believe that they may have the answer sitting there on the bench? And then beyond that, you're looking at it almost certainly a top five pick, no worse than a top seven, in what is likely to be another one of those years of the quarterback in the NFL draft. So is it almost fortuitous timing, even though you never want to see anybody get hurt?
Yeah, and it's interesting, and I would think that at some point the rest of the season we will probably see Keith Null in a starting role for that very reason. Now, you know, the other big part of it is they're going to have a very high pick, and are they going to really scrutinize what figures to be a pretty good quarterback crop and use that first pick on a number, you know, that number one pick on their quarterback of the future, and that's something that they're going to really deliberate over.
All right, thank you very much, Dan. We appreciate it. Let's welcome in Senior Editor Mike Wilkening. And, Mike, the big story in Pittsburgh this week, Ben Roethlisberger, the quarterback, concussion, suffering from symptoms from a concussion. And will he be able to play against Baltimore on Sunday night of the rematch of the AFC title game? From what we understand, he will be able to. You wonder about the wear and tear of the season, though, at that key position.
Well, Wayne, yeah, I think that he's a guy that has missed some time in seasons before, but he's generally been durable. And, you know, from their standpoint, from his standpoint, certainly, you know, he's fortunate that it was a mild incident, a concussion, what have you, that and that he's going to be able to play Sunday because, again, they lost Charlie Batch as backup to a wrist injury, which may end his season. The third-string quarterback, Dennis Dixon, now moves up to the number two spot. So, yeah, they're... You know, certainly the depth behind Roethlisberger is a little bit thinner than it was, but at least they have the key to their offense in a pivotal division game here.
You know, I guess the good news is that Dixon has been there a year and a half now, Mike, but I think most people saw him coming out of Oregon as more of a wildcat type quarterback, even though that's obviously not what the Steelers drafted him for. Is there a sense with Bruce Arians and Mike Tomlin that, in fact, Dixon is ready to run the whole package if it comes to that?
Well, I think that there would be a sense that he'd be able to do some things, certainly. Again, and you know, but as the number three quarterback, as we know, guys, it's not as if he's going to get a ton of practice reps game in, game out anyways. I think that Batch was number two and Dixon was number three, and Batch, at, you know, certainly at his stage of his career, that should probably tell you what you kind of need to know in terms of how ready Dennis Dixon was at this point, in terms of what they thought his readiness vis-a-vis the first guy off the bench getting in the lineup. So I think Dixon would be, certainly has some athleticism, has flashed some things at points in his brief pro career in the preseason and things like that. But again, in terms of readiness, certainly Batch was more ready. So they would lose a big part of the offense, I think, if Roethlisberger were out.
It sounds like it. Meanwhile, in Cleveland, head coach Eric Mangini, boy, blows a 21-point lead in Detroit, loses to the Lions on the last play of the game. There's a pass interference penalty in the end zone that helps set up that winning score. And then Mangini also afterward accused the Lions of faking injuries instead of taking timeouts. Tell us a little bit about what's going on there.
Yeah, he didn't kind of come out and out and directly accuse them, but you know, kind of strongly implied that the Lions were faking injuries when the Browns were in their no-huddle package. Certainly Jim Schwartz, the Lions coach, did not take well that saying that Mangini was, quote, out of bounds, unquote, about that sort of implication. So another not good week for Cleveland, all things considered. I think if you are looking for one positive with them, Brady Quinn probably played his best game as a pro last week. That offense looked much better, but they can't seem to put an entire game together to win games like this against a vulnerable team like Detroit, because certainly if you watched it, that was a game where the Lions were there for the taking.
Mike, we've got about a minute and a half left here. I saved a little extra time for the question I'm about to ask you. I will confess, I don't remember the last time that I saw pass interference on a Hail Mary play either. But if you look at the tape, Hank Poteet, this wasn't pass interference. This was assault and battery. I mean, you cannot do what he did to that receiver and not expect to see a flag. And at what point does Eric Mangini, head coach of the Cleveland Browns, begin to understand that that's poor coaching? You know, that's not on the officials. And when do they actually start to take steps to get this thing turned around?
Well, I think it's problematic for a number of reasons, that final play. First of all, Petit's one of the guys that Mangini brought in, one of the ex-Jets he kind of brought in to you know, be part of the defense, to sort of I guess spread the idea in terms of what he wanted defensively. And you know, Petit should know the rules and should have executed that a little bit better. I think that the bigger concern beyond that play is, you're right, Hub, the coaching, I think, game in, game out. I go back to the improvement that this team kind of doesn't seem to make on a consistent basis. They'll take a step forward, they'll take two steps backward. Certainly the record reflects badly on Eric Mangini, but if you look deeper within the game and the way this team kind of can't sustain anything they build game in, game out, all things considered, guys, you're just not seeing anything sort of sustained being built here in Cleveland at this point.
Thank you very much, Mike. Stay tuned. The Thanksgiving weekend games are coming up next on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkish. In the NFL this holiday weekend, the Packers and Lions, Raiders and Cowboys, Giants and Broncos all took part in a Thanksgiving Day triple header. As usual, here on Pro Football Weekly, we focus on the Sunday and Monday games in the NFL. The 4-6 Carolina Panthers may have seen their chance to save their season go by the boards when they lost a week ago Thursday at home to the Miami Dolphins. This week, they head to New Jersey to meet the Jets, who are also 4-6 and in similar straits. The Panthers have been win one, lose one for the last 6 weeks. The Jets are struggling through the growing pains of a rookie quarterback starting before his time. Now, one reason most rookies don't take teams to the playoffs, well, those teams aren't good enough in the first place. Although that may be a bit unfair because the Jets have redeeming value on both offense and defense around Mark Sanchez, they're just not good enough to overcome a 4-interception day by their quarterback, as was the case a week ago. Who is? The Panthers' 24-17 loss to the Dolphins last week cost them their season because after this week against the Jets and next week hosting Tampa Bay, they finish with a murderer's row of New England, Minnesota, the Giants, and New Orleans. Speaking of Tampa Bay, an NFC South Division matchup has the disappointing Falcons playing host to the Buccaneers this weekend. Now, the Falcons lost in overtime to the desperate Giants last week in the Meadowlands, 34-31. They've now lost two in a row, and at 5-5 are on the fringe of the wild card race in the NFC. This is the first of two meetings with the Bucs, who are playing much better since installing rookie quarterback Josh Freeman at the helm, much better offensively until a week ago. They got whacked by unbeaten New Orleans, 38-7. Well, who doesn't? These rookie quarterbacks would be okay if there wasn't scouting or game planning involved by their opponents. You see, Freeman was just 17-33 for all of 126 yards and three interceptions in his third career start last week. 2 weeks of data is about all an NFL opponent needs to render a rookie signal caller a liability. This game, all about the Falcons. They can keep their playoff hopes alive, and they will if they beat the Bucs Sunday in the Georgia Dome. And one other caveat to this game, Jim Bates, defensive coordinator of the Buccaneers, he's been demoted, huh?
You know, when you talk about the 5-5 Falcons hanging on to playoff hopes, you got the Miami Dolphins at 5-5 in the AFC. Going the other way, though, they're winning more than they're losing the last few weeks, and now they head into Buffalo, which hasn't been all that friendly to them in recent years. The Bills have actually taken four straight from the Dolphins at Ralph Wilson Stadium, but the Dolphins are the better football team here, particularly on the ground where they are fourth running the football. Buffalo just 31st versus the run, and if you want to turn it around and see if Buffalo can even out the time of possession category. The last time they met in week four, the Dolphins had the Bills to just 46 rushing yards. Now, Miami is 5-0 when Chad Henne throws a touchdown. So if Pat White can step in and run that wildcat with Ronnie Brown, now gone for the year, we know Ricky Williams is as hot as he can be. The Dolphins could be a team to watch the second half of the season. Here, Buffalo comes home with its new interim head coach, Perry Fuel, just trying to get a win. Interesting to see if this is the spot they can do it in. Now, a couple of real also-ran definitely figured for done for the season already. Seattle going into St. Louis. The story here is the running game again, where Seattle comes in 32nd, dead last in the NFL on the ground, but St. Louis only 28th stopping the run. You turn it around, however, St. Louis may only be 13th in the league running the football, but Steven Jackson is a monster. He is arguably the second hottest running back in the NFL right now, with nobody able to catch the Titans' Chris Johnson. St. Louis does struggle to score points, though, 31st in the league scoring, while Seattle 21st first in points allowed, and both teams struggle taking care of the football. They are tied for 21st in the league in turnover-takeaway ratio. This could be the difference in this game, though, Wayne. Seattle, 0-5 on the road this year, and they've lost each of those games by at least 11 points.
All right, Hub, the battle for Ohio ensues this weekend on the shores of the Ohio River, as the Cincinnati Bengals welcome the lowly Cleveland Browns. The Browns fell in dramatic fashion at Detroit last week, despite putting up huge offensive numbers for them. The Browns had scored all of 78 points the first nine games of the season. They got 37 at Ford Field, but it wasn't enough in a 38-37 loss to the Lions on the last play of the game. The Bengals, for at least 1 week, returned to the Bungles in blowing a 20-17 contest to the lowly Raiders. They lost three fumbles and had four turnovers in all in the game, but still lead the AFC North at 7-3. First time these two teams played, Hub, they went overtime for a 23-20 Cincinnati win back on October 4th.
Hey, Wayne, for all of our listeners who may not have been paying complete attention, the Jacksonville Jaguars are 6-4. Pretty unimpressive at 6-4, but there they are in the thick of the AFC playoff race, and now a game ahead of the Houston Texans after their Monday night loss at Tennessee. This week, they've got to go coast to coast, though, and take on a very difficult San Francisco 49er football team. Both teams like to run the ball and stop the run. Jacksonville 6 on the ground behind Maurice Jones-Drew. San Francisco 6 stopping the run. And then you look at David Garrard, the quarterback of the Jaguars. He's thrown only one touchdown in 5 road starts this season. He does have a new favorite target, though, and Mike Sims-Walker with touchdown catches in 3 consecutive games. San Francisco, they started hot. They've dropped 6 of their last 8, desperate for a win here. This one should be a pretty good head knocker out at Candlestick Park. And then also, we've got the Kansas City Chiefs visiting the San Diego Chargers, and San Diego, the hottest team in the NFL right now, with the obvious exception of the two undefeateds who meet on Monday night. You've got San Diego having won their last, or not, yes, having won their last 5 by an average of 15.2 points, and there's no good matchup in this game for the Kansas City Chiefs. Bad news keeps building for the Chiefs, because LaDainian Tomlinson started so slowly, 5 touchdowns in the last 4 games, and the Chiefs have dropped 4 of their last 5 at San Diego. The Chargers a heavy favorite in this one.
Stay tuned. We've got the big games coming up next on this holiday weekend of Pro Football Weekly.
on the air.
This is Wayne Larrabee with Hub Arkish. Some of the top games on this weekend's NFL card. The Washington Redskins head to Philadelphia where the 6-4 Eagles await. Now, Philly prevailed 27-17 back at October 26th in this matchup. And the Birds are coming off a hard-fought victory last Sunday night in Chicago. I guess, you know, what we're looking for here, Hub, is Philadelphia healthy enough to make the kind of playoff run that everyone seems to feel they will?
You know, Wayne, it's really hard to say they are. I actually was on the sidelines for Westwood one Sunday night and saw that game in Chicago. They were very impressive in being resilient and refusing to lose. But the fact is, if Bears quarterback Jay Cutler doesn't miss a couple wide-open receivers, the Eagles probably would have gotten routed. Nonetheless, they didn't. They're 6-4 now. They're in the thick of the wild card race, and a lot of it on that offense. They are so explosive now at wide receiver with DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin. Tight end Brent Celek has become a favorite target. Shady McCoy, he came up a yard short of his first 100-yard game last Sunday night in Chicago, so the offense is all there. But getting back to your question on defense, you know, Asante Samuel went down with a stinger in that shoulder. That is a huge loss for them. Don't know if he's going to be ready this Sunday or not. And at linebacker, all three starting linebackers going into training camp are on injured reserve. They've started 7 different middle linebackers, and now a little banged up front with Victor Abiamiri and Juqua Parker, both with gimpy wheels. So I don't know if the Eagles have got enough left. You know, the Redskins playing great defense these days, and this could be a very tough spot for the Eagles with all those injuries.
Yeah, you would figure it would be. Meanwhile, the Chicago Bears head to Minneapolis, where the red-hot Minnesota Vikings look to bury them for the season. We get more from Zach Zaidman.
You can't start talking about the 9-1 Vikings without talking about the play of Brett Favre, who's impressing everybody in the league, including his own coach, Brad Childress.
I don't think we've ever had any 80% throwers. He was down with stingy with throwing the football to other people on the other side of football. He's doing a great job of taking care of the football, but still throwing the ball up the field, if you will. It's not like it's a dink and dunk operation.
Favre completing an amazing 88% of his passes last week against the Seahawks. Overall, Childress has watched Favre throw 21 touchdowns compared to just 3 interceptions.
He has very good physical tools. With the length of time he's played, he has great mental tools, but he enhances what he has by spending time at his trade.
Favre leads the league with a passer rating of 112. His 3 picks, the lowest total in the NFL for any starting quarterback with at least 200 passing attempts. Meantime, turnovers have killed the Bears. Jay Cutler has thrown a league-high 18 interceptions, leaving some to wonder if Lovie Smith's Bears have ruined their franchise quarterback.
Of course, you don't want to throw any interceptions, but you know, sometimes you overthrow the ball. I don't think it's any more than that.
The Bears' biggest problem has been red zone productivity. The Bears have been there 33 times. Opponents have made 33 trips to the red zone against them. But the Bears have been outscored in the red area by 50 points. Now at 4-6, Smith's team is in trouble.
I feel like we're a good football team. Our record does not show that right now, but we're a good football team. Eventually, we're going to do some of those things that have prevented us from winning games. Why not this week?
Problem is, the Bears have lost 6 of their last 7 in Minnesota. I'm Zach Zaidman for Pro Football Weekly.
You know, Wayne, I've been listening to Lovie say all year that we're a good football team, and it was really hard to defend until this past Sunday night. Now, they're not a great football team. They may be just a little better than average, but they played well enough to win that game Sunday night. And again, it was the savior, quite frankly. It was Jay Cutler who cost him that football game. That doesn't figure to happen too often. He is a remarkably talented young man. But you know, Wayne, I think what you really worry about here is it in his head now? The rest of the things around him have gone so badly all year long that he doesn't look like Jay Cutler anymore. And if he starts going in the wrong direction, sometimes that takes a long time for a quarterback to get turned around.
Yeah, no question about it. We'll keep a close tab on that. Stay tuned. We've got more top games coming up after these messages. You're listening to a holiday edition of Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. We resume with our preview of the top games in the NFL, and Of the NFC West Division leading Arizona Cardinals, who've been very good on the road this season, head to Tennessee, where the Titans have been very hot of late, coming off a dramatic victory at Houston on Monday night. Now, both teams carry winning streaks into this game. The Titans have won four straight. The Cardinals have won three in a row. This should be quite a ball game.
It's really fascinating, Wayne, and I got to tell you, if you'd asked me about the Texans, not the Texans, but the Titans a couple weeks ago, I would have said, yeah, they're a good football team, and they're going to win some games, and they might actually get back to six or seven wins after an 0-6 start. But people are actually saying now, could they win 10 straight? They could win 10 straight and not make the playoffs, you know, which would be a shame. I don't think they're going to. I don't think they're going to run the table. But after watching them Monday night, you cannot discount them. And the Arizona Cardinals have got to be thinking, yeah, this is not a 4-6 football team. Chris Johnson is the most explosive, dynamic, exciting player in the NFL right now. But then you turn it around in case, again, people haven't been watching closely. The Arizona Cardinals, 31st in the league rushing the football, but they've got a running game budding, and it is in the form of Beanie Wells. I mean, this kid, if he can learn to hold on to the football and they decide to have a game where they give it to him 20, 22 times, you don't know what's going to happen. Don't know about Kurt Warner's status. Assume he's going to be fine, but remember he had the head injury or the concussion-like symptoms last week. But to me, this is a really exciting game, a little off the charts, so to speak, but should be a great football game in Nashville.
No question about it, Hub. Meanwhile, the Pittsburgh Steelers renew their rivalry with the Baltimore Ravens. It's a key game in the AFC North Division, and it's previewed by Ken Laird.
It will be a rematch of the 2008 AFC Championship game Sunday in Baltimore when Pittsburgh comes to town. But a year later, both teams are struggling to win ballgames. The Ravens have lost five of their last seven to even their record at 5-5, and the Steelers have lost two straight, including a shocking overtime defeat to a two-win Kansas City team. Steelers coach Mike Tomlin on where his team stands.
We're a 6-4 football team. Definitely not where we anticipated being or want to be, but Redemption Sunday, if you will, is coming for us in the form of the Baltimore Ravens on Sunday Night Football. That medicine is kind of just what the doctor ordered, having the opportunity to play our rival at their place on primetime television.
It's a change from the last 2 years when Baltimore played in Pittsburgh in primetime, and the Ravens reportedly requested to the league in the offseason that they not be forced to have that disadvantage again. Ravens linebacker Ray Lewis has been a part of this rivalry since the Ravens franchise was formed in 1996, and while the Steelers have won 18 of the 28 games in the series, including all three meetings last year, Baltimore has won five of the last six at M&T Bank Stadium.
I think it should be, the classic rivals that it's always been. I mean, you know what you get with them. You know, they're going to, come to play football, and you got to, scrap up your chin straps and get ready to play football. You know, same thing I've been telling my guys, all we're talking about is a 60-minute ball game. But in the division, truly just get that out there, understand how important, division games are.
And the division is tight despite Cincinnati sweeping Baltimore and Pittsburgh in four meetings. All three AFC North teams have playoff designs. Steelers receiver Hines Ward knows both his team and the Ravens will be desperate Sunday.
It's going to be an all-out war. This game is definitely going to be a war. And as a player, this is a game that you appreciate, you want to be a part of.
Now, Ward's quarterback Ben Roethlisberger is expected to play despite suffering a concussion last week. And Baltimore QB Joe Flacco is ready for his second year of opportunities against the Steelers.
Pittsburgh, Baltimore, I think that says enough. I think everybody should be excited. All the fans should be excited about this week. And we feel like we got the players to go out there and compete against these guys. So we're ready to go.
For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Ken Laird.
You know, Wayne, an angry Pittsburgh Steelers team is the last thing you want to see coming into your stadium for a primetime game. But the question is, without Troy Polamalu, is this defense capable of doing what it needs to do in what you know is going to be a head knocker like this one?
No question about it, Hub. And again, what a difference a year makes for these two teams who are playing with so much momentum at the end of last year. The team in Houston, the Texans, have not been able to get their trek up the ladder going to the playoffs because they haven't been able to get by the Colts of Indianapolis. David Nuno takes a look at the Colts and Texans' latest matchup coming up this weekend.
The Texans and Colts meet up this weekend in Houston for the final time. The division rivals have certainly had different luck this season. The Colts have caught all the breaks lately, while the Texans, on the other hand, are finishing a play short, or maybe I should just say wide left. For two consecutive weeks, Indianapolis has dodged some major bullets. Last weekend against Baltimore, up by only two, the Ravens throw an ill-advised interception in the red zone with just minutes left. And who could forget the 4th-and-2 play against the Patriots? Regardless, a win is a win, and even though the Colts have a four-game lead in the division with six to play, Colts head coach Jim Caldwell says it's still business time.
We won't approach this game any differently than we do each and every game that we have. We'll look at it and measure it for what it's worth, and it's important for us to get a victory, and then we'll add them up at the end.
The Texans are 5-5 and have lost 4 games this season, where on their last offensive play of the game, they've had a chance to tie, but they haven't. And 3 of those 4 games have been against division opponents. And yes, one of those came in Indianapolis just weeks ago. And if you're searching for a positive, maybe that's it.
We got to play better this week than we played them last time. Yeah, we've been in some good games with them, but they've been making the plays at the end, and you know they're coming in here 10-0.
Jim Caldwell does think that's an advantage for the Texans, though.
They had an opportunity to play us once, and you can kind of formulate a pretty good plan of what you're going to do the next time around.
Still stuck on 5 wins, the Texans say maybe it's a good thing that they had the short week this week, and they aren't going to think about where they stand in terms of playoffs.
We got to figure out a way to win our 6th game. That's all we can do right now, and obviously we want to play better than we did last night to get that done.
As we enter December, the Colts will see how long they can stay undefeated, but knowing you don't win a Super Bowl in December. And the Texans still are in the hunt for the playoffs, but the roadblocks are getting bigger and bigger every weekend, especially this weekend. I'm David Nuno for Pro Football Weekly.
Thank you very much, David. Stay tuned. The Headliner is up next on Pro Football Weekly. Beat New Orleans Saints figure to be tested like never before this season as the New England Patriots come to the Superdome. We get details on this week's Headliner from Mike Petrelia.
The 10-0 New Orleans Saints play host to the 7-3 New England Patriots at the Superdome in what should be a classic Monday night showdown. The Patriots are fully aware of the challenge that awaits them. Slow down quarterback Drew Brees and the high-powered Saints offense just long enough to give Tom Brady a chance to do some high-powered damage of his own. 2009 Saints are not only undefeated, they're scoring points at a pace to challenge the 16-0 Patriots of 2 years ago. The Saints have scored 369 points, or 36.9 points, every time they take the field. The Patriots of 2 years ago averaged 36.8. But when Patriots coach Bill Belichick mentions comparisons, he sees the 2001 St. Louis Rams. That was the greatest show on turf that was only slowed by his Patriots, who won their first of 3 Super Bowls this decade in Super Bowl 36.
It's everything. It's wherever you want to start. Running backs, quarterback, tight end, receivers, offensive line, the scheme, all the different things that they do that Sean does offensively. You got to defend a lot of scheme. You got to defend a lot of players.
Linebacker Adalis Thomas admits facing Brees and company is a little unsettling.
Very scary. I don't know if I just say scary. Very scary. I mean, running back, wide receivers, a good quarterback, offensive line, run the ball.
Patriots cornerback Lee Bodden is looking forward to the challenge.
Definitely looking forward to it. Just like we were looking forward to playing, against the Indianapolis Colts. You know, they're undefeated. It's always good to, play a great team like that, and they're on a roll. And like you said, the offense is doing pretty good. So, everybody's, always talking about our defense, kind of talking bad about our defense. So it'll be really good to show, how good of a defense we are against a top offense like that.
The Saints are trying to stay one game ahead of one-loss Minnesota in the NFC race, while the Patriots are tied with Cincinnati and San Diego for second in seeding in the race in the AFC. In New England, I'm Mike Petrelia, Pro Football Weekly.
Wayne, as big games go, I'm not sure they get any bigger than this. I thought last week, or actually 2 weeks ago, in Indianapolis with the Colts and the Patriots was as big as it got. But for some reason, this one seems to have even greater overtones because of the explosiveness of these two offenses and the challenges that these two defenses are facing right now. Everybody talks about the rebuilding young, not necessarily young, but rebuilding and somewhat young New England defense. Part of the reason for that is the number of injuries they've had, particularly at linebacker and in the secondary. And now you turn around and you look at the New Orleans Saints. They're so banged up at cornerback. First they bring back Chris McAllister, then there's rumors they're going to bring back Mike McKenzie. I mean, you've got the perfect strength versus weakness matchups on both sides of the ball here, and you ask yourself, could this be the first 100-point game in NFL history?
Well, the thing about the Saints, I think, Hub, that early this season, before they got nicked up a bit with injuries, that triggered New Orleans to this run was their defense, and everyone was pretty surprised that Greg Williams was able to go in there and really turn that thing around. Now, they put in a new system. They brought in a few new players, but they've gotten great mileage out of Darren Sharper, who's had a tremendous year.
Well, Darren Sharper's been outstanding, and a couple names on both sides of the ball, or both sides of the field, I should say, that fans maybe aren't quite as familiar with. Will Smith was a first-round pick out of Ohio State, I believe it was 5 or 6 years ago, but he's having easily his best year as a pro with 8.5 sacks already. Charles Grant is getting great pressure on the other side. A big loss for the Saints is they've been playing without Cedric Ellis, their outstanding nose tackle who's had a bum knee, and they're better at linebacker, although it's the same group as last year. Jonathan Vilma with a year in that system in between Scott Fujita and Shanley. This is an impressive defense when healthy. And you turn around and look at New England, after all the injuries, how are they getting it done? Well, Tully Bantakane is leading them in sacks right now, and they've got a bunch of guys with 2, 3, 4 sacks. They don't have anybody really sticking out. Adelius Thomas, who we just heard from in that report, was a little disappointing early in the year, but he's coming on and getting some pressure now. And Wayne, if Vince Wilfork isn't in the Pro Bowl, that would be criminal. He's one of those guys that you look at the numbers and you say, well, there's nothing all that impressive. I think one sack, about 28 tackles, but this guy commands triple teams. Double teams don't do it with Vince Wilfork, and he is dominating the line of scrimmage right now against everybody that the New England Patriots play.
Yeah, the New England Patriots' 3 losses all been on the road at the Jets, at Denver, and at Indianapolis, and this week they are at the Superdome in New Orleans on Monday night to take on the unbeaten Saints. That's our headliner. The Handicapper's Corner with Chuck Esposito returns next week. We've got the Publisher's Pen next. The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
Wayne, we talked about it a little bit in various portions of the show today as we continue to look around the league more and more and worry about players trying to come back off of head injuries or concussion-like injuries. And it is a major, major concern. Now, both the league and the NFLPA have concerns, but there seems to be a real disagreement on what's the best thing to do to protect their players. Roger Goodell has asked players to report to team trainers and doctors if they think that a teammate is suffering from some concussion-like symptom. The NFLPA has come back and said, we're not doing that. And to quote Mike Sellers, the fullback of the Washington Redskins, we ain't no snitches. Well, we don't think that's the problem. The problem is protecting your teammates as best you can. And how can the NFLPA turn around the same week and demand that Dr. Ira Kaysen be removed from chairman of the NFL's Committee on Concussions, contending that Kaysen is biased, and pretend that they're trying to protect their own players? If they're right about Kaysen, fine, there should be an inquiry. But then how can the players turn around and say, but we're not willing to protect each other? There's a disconnect here. It is a major, major problem, and both sides need to get on the same page and start worrying about the players' health.
Well said, Hub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Special thanks to the Saints and Colts radio networks. The executive coordinating producer of Pro Football Weekly is Randy Meyer. Our engineer this week, Dave Olson. Pro Football Weekly originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkush and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. We wish you all the best this Thanksgiving holiday weekend, and we'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.